Yes, we're in business.
Hello?
I heard Mike.
I didn't say anything.
Yeah, I know, but I could hear background noise, so I knew we were connected.
Oh, I hear what you say.
I
You heard
heard the I,
MIC.
yeah, I heard the mic, so I knew I was good.
I'm hearing the mic now too.
Yeah, you are hearing the mic. You're on the mic with Mike.
I'm on the mic with the mic.
What was
I
wrong?
think so. I updated Skype and then it asked me a question and I said yes, and I think it was asking me if I wanted to try, like if I wanted to use this new experimental version or something because it looked all
Oh.
different. But I thought it was just the normal update.
Yeah.
So this time I said
If it
no, and
prompted you, do you want your mic to work? No.
it. Yeah. Said no, I would like to experience frustration instead.
Did you get to go to Baltimore? I mean Buffalo, didn't Baltimore. Buffalo Comic Con. Did you get to go?
Yeah, I was there for a little bit yesterday. I saw Rob. I got to hang out with him for an hour or so,
Yeah, cool.
or a little bit more. You know, it was real small, bigger than a hotel con, but only by a little bit. But he was there longer than I. He was there
He's going back
before I
today,
got.
I guess.
Yeah, he said he wasn't sure if he was gonna still go today. This was yesterday anyway, but he said that if he didn't, then his wife and kids were doing something that he would join them
Oh, okay.
in doing. So either way, he wouldn't be podcasting. But I have a feeling that he got his fill yesterday. He was there before and after I was, and there was only so much to see. So
Yeah.
unless there was some more shopping that he wanted to do, but
Did you do any shopping or not really?
I did a little bit. I wasn't going to look for a lot unless I saw a really good deal on some.
Bless you. Good Lord, woman.
Hi, Barb.
Chris says hi. He says bless you.
That's a good tissue. Hi, Harley.
Harley just got back from a long walk. She
By
ate her food.
yourself?
No, I took her.
I'm just kidding.
That's why I was gonna be late.
Yeah, I thought maybe.
Daryl was trying to convince me that Inhumans sucked, and it was getting me mad. So I was gonna take Harley for a walk before we
You had to go work off the steam.
work off the steam.
Yeah, actually, I read quickly through your conversation you guys had, but
He was saying I was liking it because nobody else was liking it, but I wasn't aware that nobody. I knew that it had preconceptions that people didn't like it, but they hadn't watched it. But the only two people that I really heard from that watched it were Daryl, Keith, and Jack Sutherland, but not even from Jack. I heard it from Martin and Nick as they were talking, because he went to go see it on the IMAX. Because I
Oh,
listened to the Nerdy Legion, so it's like
right.
I thought people were liking it that had seen it on TV and stuff, you know? I mean, because I try to avoid it. The only reason I went on to Daryl's thread was because I saw Daryl is watching Inhumans, and I'm like, oh shit, I didn't know it was starting. So then I went to go Google like when it was starting. I'm like, whew. Lucky I got home early on Friday and set the DVR.
Yeah, I probably won't watch it, not because of anyone else's reaction, even if people were into it, just because I'm so behind on any of the comic book shows, and there's so many of them now. Like the amount of them almost
Yeah, they're everywhere.
decreases my desire to keep up. I don't know why, but I mean, I'll probably catch up with more of The
On
Flash at some
Netflix.
point.
Oh.
I've seen most of the Netflix shows. I haven't made it through Iron Fist.
I haven't gotten that far. I haven't even did Luke Cage yet.
Yeah, I've seen Luke Cage,
I'm watching them in order
Daredevils.
though, so
Yeah, me too.
I gotta watch Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and then Defenders. And I don't know when I'm
Right.
gonna get to them, but
Well, you can take your time whenever you feel watch them when you feel like
I
watching
guess
them,
I'd
and then
like
you'll.
to finish watching them before that Disney fiasco happens and they're potentially maybe off.
Well, no, I would think those are Netflix shows.
Oh,
Those ones,
really?
I
You
mean,
don't think they'll go away?
no, because Netflix is involved in producing those. The Disney stuff is just like stuff that they contracted with Marvel, like Disney movies and the Marvel movies and stuff like that, which are just not stuff that Netflix had any hand in developing. They just have them on there.
Huh.
But these are Netflix's shows,
'Cause they're
just
co-produced, they're paying for it.
Marvel properties, but they're actually producing the shows. They're
Okay.
Netflix shows. But
But well, that does that mean though when they do cut over their streaming service that they can't say, well, season four of Iron Fist is ours now? They can't cut the ties?
I don't. Well, I'm assuming not.
I'm pretty sure that Marvel learned their lesson from their bankruptcy slash when they started selling their properties. Because, like, they can't get their X-Men back or Fantastic Four or Spider-Man. Do you know what I mean? The
Right,
studios
yeah.
have the rights, and if I was to draft anything new, I would say we hold the right to withdraw, or something to that effect. Like if you
Oh,
buy it,
sure.
you buy it on a yearly basis or something.
Yeah, or for a certain duration of years. I'm
Yeah,
sure they didn't
for a
sign over
movie, you
the.
have like 5 years to complete so many films or something, or we get the rights back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 'cause well, what they did with X-Men and Spider-Man are the exception. That's not what's normally done,
Yeah.
with properties. So I wouldn't assume that they would have signed
Well, I think
over.
they make the dumb decisions when they went bankrupt.
Right,
Yeah.
they were desperate. I
Yeah,
mean,
how do we survive?
people look at it now and think, oh, they have so much success, it sucks that they don't have the access to these characters. But at the time, I mean, they may not have had it. They didn't have any bargaining leverage, I mean,
Yeah.
they had to take what they could get at the time. And yeah, it sucks now, but they might not even have gotten to the point that they're at now if they hadn't made those deals.
True.
Or they may be even in a worse scenario. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, I mean, I don't think they had signed over the rights in perpetuity to like Daredevil and that stuff, obviously. But I don't think that they could take the seasons that are already produced by Netflix and move them somewhere else.
Yeah.
Maybe they could move the show itself in future seasons or something. I don't. Possibly, but anyway, yeah, I don't know. I hadn't found. I think I've only watched like two or three episodes of Iron Fist, and I don't find it terrible. But I also not like I gotta watch another episode. It's been kind of
Yeah.
boring so far.
Do you watch a
But
lot of TV?
I go through phases. I go through
Like
with
right now,
phases
are
with
you
almost
watching
everything.
anything?
Lately, I've been watching a lot of Doctor Who.
Oh.
So I figured we could talk about that for the rest of the episode. But I tend not to watch shows as they air. I'd rather watch something that's already finished.
Yeah.
So I don't really DV I don't we don't have a DVR and I don't DVR anything. I just watch stuff that's streaming or
Well, if you did have a DVR, it's like watching streaming, sort of. You
Yeah,
just
if you have enough
stockpile them,
space,
yeah.
yeah, you stockpile them. But I'm content to wait. I don't keep current on much of anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to Buffalo Comic Con, it was pretty cool. I mean, I wasn't planning on buying much, but I'm still working on Wonder Woman Volume 2, and
Yeah.
I probably will be for a while because there's certain issues that I'm just gonna wait and see if I can get a good deal on. And I happened to do that yesterday because I bought some from two different dealers, and most of what I bought were the Brian Bolland Cover Era, which are where some of the more expensive issues are. And I got two of the more expensive issues, 63, which is guest
Are
starring.
those the Messner Loebs issues or?
Yeah, they're Messner Loebs, yeah. 63 is guest starring Deathstroke, and that I've never seen cheaper than $15. I got it for $5. And I think 70 issue 73, where it says Diana's new job, and she's got a Taco Whiz hat on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, that one I think usually goes for a lot too, for whatever reason. And I
I
got that
think
for four
Brian
bucks.
Boland is pretty phenomenal. He did a lot of Gotham Knights covers too.
Oh yeah, I love these covers. I love Brian Bolland.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite, like in terms of cover artists. He doesn't do like a lot of interiors
No,
anymore.
no. Most of those guys and gals that get to that point that can make a living doing covers
It's
end
more,
up.
it's lucrative for them to do covers and
Right, yeah,
yeah.
end up doing that. I remember reading something, an interview with Fiona Staples, I think it was, that was talking about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so altogether, I got about 12 issues of Wonder Woman, and got like, none were as good a deal as the ones I mentioned, but all were like half of what I see them for.
Yeah.
So that was cool. I was just kind of that was kind of the only thing I was looking for, if I happen to see a good deal on those, because they're tough to find for a good price. And but I walked around, did some watched Rob shop a little bit,
Yeah.
and looked at some
What
stuff.
was he buying? Batman?
Well, he had bought some cheap issues before I got there that I didn't really see. He had a few different things in mind that he was looking at, and I know he posted on Twitter he bought it after I left, but we looked at it when I was there. He picked up Mr. Miracle number one, the
Ah,
Jack Kirby
nice.
one.
Yeah. I had finished those in college. All the Jack Kirby Fourth World stuff I had bought in college.
Yeah, I think I remember you talking about that back
Yeah.
when we covered that. Yeah. So that's cool that you finished those back then.
Yeah.
But
I bet they're
there
going
wasn't.
up, though. Like, slightly, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking, too bad he didn't buy that before the new Mr. Miracle series started coming out.
Yeah, and that's popular. I don't like it, but it's popular. I'd like to know what you think, just because you're a Mr. Miracle connoisseur. Like I know what they're going for, Chris. Like I think he's in some kind of like mind trip, but not a lot. Like I've heard people talk about it, and I don't think a lot of people really understand that this can't be real. It's too ridiculous. Like first of all, Scott would never kill himself. Okay? He wouldn't because he's got Barda. Oberon was dead, so he's like doing a lot. Barda and Scott seem totally out of character. Like something's trapped them and is making them like it's like a Desaad death trap or something, like a mind thing. It has to be. Because like for one, in one scene they're arguing whether the shower's working. Like Scott's in the shower and he's trying to get and he's like, "Can you turn on the shower, Barda?" And the shower's on, you know, the artist depicts him getting wet. And he's like, "Can't you turn the shower on?" And he says, "Well, can't you ask Mother Box to turn the shower on?" And he's like, "Mother Box, can you turn the water on?" It's just weird. It's just like it has to be some kind of like mind trap that I mean there was several even in the original series we saw him trapped in the mind games a couple times.
Yeah. I would imagine that Tom King would play around with different concept, different ideas of
Yeah.
captivity and being trapped in different kinds of traps and stuff like that. I'm
Yeah.
sure there's going to be some like surprises and
But
reveals
like I
along
was
the way.
listening to one podcast, the one that one I always listen to. And I was like, they're not getting it. Like, and it's because they don't know Mr. Miracle. Do you know what I mean? They're reading it like, well, one of the guys has read everything. He just forgets everything because he reads too much. He doesn't read mood read, or he just reads it. Comes out, reads it. If he has like 60 books, he'll read all 60 in a week. You know what I mean? When you do that, you don't retain it. I don't care what anybody says, especially as we get older. You know, he's close to my age. He ain't gonna remember shit. But yeah, I was listening and I was like, man, it's so weird to hear it from a perspective of somebody that doesn't know the characters. I know why he bothers me. Like, it's the repetition of words. It's almost like a play on Dr. Seuss. He'll like pick one word in one caption and he'll say that word 5, 6 times, and it drives me mad. And then the other thing that drives me mad is he drives like a 9-panel grid, and it's like thematic, like it's something you'd see in TV or a cartoon animation, but it doesn't work in the comic book. It looks like wasted space to me, you know, because the movement is too subtle. Like the artist, he just moved a shoulder, okay? You know what I mean? If it
That
was in a motion picture and you saw it, it might have more impact, or you could see it. There's just subtle things, but man, I would like to. I mean, when that thing, maybe when it's finished and you decide to read it, I'd be interested to see what you think,
Yeah,
because
I probably will.
you read the Mr. Miracle with me, so yeah.
Yeah, I tend to I think what I've read of Tom's stuff, it appeals to me more than it does you,
Yeah.
speaking generally. But I do hear what you're saying in one respect, that there have been single issues back when I was reading Batman in single issues, which I think is the only thing, anything else I've read of his, I think I've read in trade. But there would be issues that I felt like were bit too quick of a read
Yeah.
for an individual issue.
I don't
Um,
think
but
anybody really understands what I'm talking about except Barb. Because I'll show her the panels and she just shakes her head. Like she knows what I'm she understands me, so she knows why I'm saying it. But I wouldn't stop if I was him. He's winning all kinds of awards and is at the top of the sales charts.
Sure, yeah.
Well, Batman is, but
Batman is, but it's not just been sales. I mean, he's gotten a lot of critical
yeah.
response, that positive and stuff. And I like I said, I mean, I like overall what I've read. I think I can see how he's not for everybody though, because he definitely gets deep into some he likes to dive deep into characters' mind and sort of goes for a deep kind of psychological look at characters and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't describe that very well. But
I know what you're talking about. And I'm okay with that part. I'm not a problem with the plot or where he's going. Like I could see where what he's doing. It's the execution that kills me. It's because I keep hearing the word over and over again and my mind starts circling like in this for loop, like you know you code in a for loop or a while loop. It goes woof woof woof, and I keep seeing that pattern of the word just repeat 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 repeat.
Yeah, what do they call it when
Dark
you
side is dark side is dark side is dark side is over and over again. It's a subliminal message, and that those things don't work on me.
Yeah, what are
Except
they? What are...
once there was a comedian in Vegas. I think Barb went with us. I'm not sure. But we went to a this is kind of a little funny tangent, but Barb when we were in high school, Barb went on several vacations with us. So she would travel with us and we'd go on the family truckster and we'd drive to Vegas or drive to California or drive to various places and we drove to Vegas. And we saw a comedy show. We always bought tickets for some kind of show. And we went to go see a comedy show at one of the casinos. And my dad goes my back then the casino machines were all based on change, you know, like quarter, dimes, nickels. They weren't based on like a card or you put the 20 in and then it keeps your credit and then pumps out a piece of paper saying this is what your credit is and then you go cash in the credit sheet. They were all based on
Right.
change, so you hear ding 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 ding. Like you don't hear that anymore. You might hear the machine ring like it you win, but you don't hear the change going, you know, coming out like streaming change. But my dad, bless his heart, he was trying to bribe the guy to give us good seats at the comedy thing. So he takes out this pocket full of change, a bunch of quarters, and he goes, "Can you give us a really good seat?" You know, these quarters. So the guy just looks at him like, "What the fuck?" You know, usually you sip the guy a 20 or something like that. So he had like 450 in change. And he sat us next to this huge pole. It was the worst seat ever. But anyway, there was a comedian there called Steve Oedekerk. He was a comedian at the time, and he also did he wrote for comedies. Like he would be a screenwriter for certain television comedies. But he was talking about subliminal messages, and it really worked on me because I still remember his name today. He just kept repeating his name over and over again. Oda Kirk, Oda Kirk, and I still remember it.
So that's the secret, how to get you to remember something, huh? Was I gonna say?
So don't tip with lots of change. It won't get you anywhere.
Yeah, that sounds like that backfired.
It did. So
But yeah, we had a good time.
we saw each other too since the last time we recorded. You came down to Colorado for
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
almost a whole week. Is that like 7 days?
Five, we were there
Five
5 nights.
days, yeah.
Yeah. Spent a couple with you.
Yeah.
And in Colorado Springs. Yeah, Rob was asking me about that yesterday, and he said, he's like, so you saw the basement? He's like, can you describe what it was like walking down there? What did
Bob
you
would have a
see? And...
conniption because of the chaos, but
Yeah, I told him, yeah, I saw the unread Marvel section. I think it was about the size of my collection. But, yeah, that was fun. And so I got to see the basement. I got to see the collected editions room,
Yeah.
basically. And before I visited you, I got to check out Mile High Comics, and that was cool to see. Just because, like I told you, all those back in the day, all those Mile High Comics ads in my comic books,
Yeah.
to see the store where that came from, and
I don't think that was the store it came from.
oh, probably not. I don't think at the
That
time,
wasn't
but
the
just.
original store. They had to move there when they grew into what they were.
Right.
That's a
But.
fairly, I think a fairly new store. I don't know where their original one was. I know they closed one recently because they have like one in Thornton, one near Boulder, one that warehouse. I think they have three shops now.
Yeah,
But
that
they're
sounds
all
right.
based on him buying a collection. He tends to buy more than he sells. I would go base he always writes newsletters and I read them from time to time and he talks about dripping sales, but he said he always talks about how much he's procured. So I think he's procuring more than the demand is wanting. That's what I think. I think he's got to lay off the purchasing and sell what he's got.
Yeah,
Which is may
possibly.
I mean they're you they could be hitting an era where people are turning to digital too. Maybe it's starting to take an upturn and it could change the landscape. I mean, there'll always be your record collection or your retro people collecting whatever. But
Sure.
if that's diminishing and the fan base of that is dying off, you got to start thinking about how you're going to adapt for the future.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he certainly has a huge inventory at that store. That's for sure. Not just the stuff that you can look at, but you
It's
can
really
see.
good. Like, I don't know if you paid attention to the different sections. Like, he's got the section where they have like the real expensive books on the as you walk in, it's on your left-hand side. But there's a section like in the middle towards the back, and it's like the cheaper books. And it is a good area to explore to get like a full run of something. Like when I was there, I was trying to focus on what was that imprint that DC had that was sci-fi? The Helix. Like it's if you're looking for like obscure stuff that isn't worth a lot, you could find like good full runs in there. Do you know what I mean? You could just and for cheap and for fair prices. That's a good place to shop is that back era. But I tend to be like Rob nowadays. I'd rather buy like a few cheap books, but like look to buy a decent copy of something that's expensive. You know what I mean? Like that'll be my purchase. I just bought some comics. I completed a full run of New Talent Showcase. How about that? I completed Bad Rock and Company, which was only 6 issues. I only needed 2 left. I almost completed Punisher Warzone. I have 5 left to go on that. And I got 2 more Daredevils. I got Daredevil number 9 and Daredevil minus 1. So now I'm only lacking like 5 in the 100s and a couple in the 30s. So I'm under 10, and then I have every single Daredevil ever published. So I'm really close on that. And what else did I get? 2 more Justice Leagues. I got Justice League 73 and 74. So I'm almost closing in on that, minus I only have like 3 issues in the top 10. But beyond that, I almost have a complete run of Justice League of America. And that means every volume. This is the first volume that I'm talking about. I don't have the first appearance either in Brave and the Bold. But I'm working my way. And then I got some Bronze Age Hulk. I went down another rabbit hole. I started reading Len Wein Hulk, and it kind of got me down the Hulk rabbit hole. So I started looking at holes I was missing. I really like to read the Hulk when I'm in the mood for it, because it's very much like Frankenstein, the monster movie. Just every episode is like, the poor Hulk. And I like kind of like Dumb Hulk. I think he's my favorite incarnation. I don't care for when he's green and he's smart. I like when he's dumb, because it adds a different element to it. You got the smartest scientist and then a really dumb monster. I like that element.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely like the classic version, I would
Yeah.
say. Then you have different variations on that, I would think. But yeah, I told Rob we saw a Daredevil number one yesterday. I told Rob that I got to hold yours.
Yeah, Daredevil number 1 and 2.
Yeah, I saw them both.
Hell
I
no.
t touched number two, technically.
I should have took you through that whole pile. I think that one pile you would have been really interested in. There's some good books in that pile. There's a giant size X-Men in there. There's a lot of like Golden Age. My Batman number three is in there.
Yeah, I
So
think we. You said at some point about something about showing me Batman number three, and then I think we just forgot. But
yeah.
that's okay. So much to look at. But
So you wanna start talking some comics?
sure, probably should get into
Yeah,
it.
why don't you go first?
All right. Let me see first. Well, somehow, without intending to, I read all team up books, two Marvel and one DC. I'll start with Marvel team up number 99. Both the Marvel ones I read too were the issue before a anniversary issue, without intending that. So this is 99 right before 100, obviously, and it's Spider-Man and Machine Man, a Kirby creation. And the cover advertises the fact that they're going to be going up against Baron Brimstone and Sandman. And it's kind of interesting that on the cover they depicted Sandman in his traditional costume, just the green t-shirt and stuff. But throughout the issue, he actually has the more superhero, or not superhero, but rather supervillain, but more costume where he has the face mask, the green face mask, and his it's less of a casual looking outfit, more of a costume, still with the green. This is by Tom DeFalco with art by Jerry Bingham and Mike Esposito, and it's called "And Machine Man Makes Three." And this takes place when Peter Parker is in grad school and he's a teaching assistant. And he kind of just goes out for a swing on the webs to get a break from studying. And meanwhile, Baron Brimstone breaks Sandman out of jail. He's being contained by this plexiglass bubble made of unstable molecules by Reed Richards to keep him contained. But Brimstone is able to take care of that prison easily, whereas Sandman could not. And then he teleports him off to Brimstone's estate. And we have a editor's note letting us know that in Machine Man number 16, Machine Man disrupted one of Baron Brimstone's operations that he had going on, that to try to make money and whatnot. So we so their plan that they're going to hatch is to draw Machine Man out. Is they know Brimstone knows that there's a woman that has some kind of connection to him, and if they kidnap her, Pamela Quinn, her name is, if they kidnap her, that they can probably use her to draw him out. And so they attack the building where she works, not knowing that Machine Man is there in disguise as his alter ego, Aaron. So when Brimstone and Sandman attack, Sandman knocks Aaron through several walls, but that gives him an opportunity to get out of sight and come back in as Machine Man. Well, meanwhile, Spider-Man going by, he his spider sense kicks in, and that brings him in, and the two heroes attack Sandman at the same time. mess up by running into each other. But from there, in the confusion, Brimstone and Sandman are able to escape with the woman, and we have a kind of 4 or 5 pages at least that I zoned out a little bit during, because it's your typical misunderstanding between two heroes. They fight for a while, and I know you know how that's going to resolve. So just kind of waiting to get through that, and eventually they figure out that they're on the same side, and Machine Man uses one of Spider-Man's tracers. He's able to modify it using his own body and track down Brimstone. But first, Spider-Man follows him to Gears Gavin's garage, where Machine Man is outfitted with some extra equipment. Basically, Gears attached a propeller to his head, and even Machine Man comments on the fact that he looks kind of ridiculous, but this allows Spider-Man to use his webs to hook up to Machine Man, and that allows them to get out of the city because
With the helicopter head?
the helicopter had
Instead
the
of like some jet boots?
right. Yeah, that probably would have been more fashionable. As Gears Gavin says, you want to be fashionable or functional? And but they need it because
But I
the
would
well,
think a jet boot would even be faster, though.
yeah, maybe it
Helicopters
may.
are, I mean, like, you got that propeller thing going on.
I guess it was just down to the maybe Gears didn't have the equipment for the rocket boots
Yeah.
in stock. There was a back order on rocket boot.
Tony Stark had bought them all.
Yeah. So, but they need some way to get out of the city and a distance into the countryside, because that's where the homing signal is emanating from. And so they arrive and attack. And the thing with Baron Brimstone is that he uses sort of a combination of technology and magic. And so there is a sequence where it seems as though Spider-Man has been drawn into some other realm, and has to fight some strange creatures. But when he finally gets through those creatures over to Baron, he is able to discover this device that Baron Brimstone has under his cloak attached to his back, and Spider-Man just kind of goes ahead and breaks it just to see what will happen, and they immediately are shot out of that realm, and it's not really clear to Spider-Man whether he was really even in one or if it was just an illusion, but one way or the other, he just socks Brimstone across the jaw. And Machine Man has kind of a neat move where he loosens the gears in his or the couplings in his waist so that he can whirl his upper body and disrupts Sandman's form. And the two of them basically cooperate to take down Sandman and rescue Pamela. But the whole thing with Pamela is that she's terrified of Machine Man. She has been rescued him by him before, but she says, "Keep your cold and human hands away from me," and she runs into the arms of Spider-Man. But the whole classic kind of dichotomy with the love interest that is repulsed by the either repulsed by the hero and only is interested in his alter ego, or vice versa. In this case, usually it's the alter ego. They're interested in Thor instead, or Iron Man, or whatever the case may be, instead of the alter ego. Superman instead of Clark Kent, but in this case it's the reverse. She's interested in Aaron Stack, not knowing that Aaron Stack is actually Machine Man. So Spider-Man's in the end thinks that compared to his problems, you know, at least he Spider-Man could take off his costume and blend in with humanity, but Machine Man has nowhere to go to really forget about the fact that he stands apart from everybody else. So it was a decent read. Probably my least favorite of the three that I read, but that's not saying it was bad. It was just a fun little issue, and Machine Man's always an interesting character. It was a different kind of team up for the two of them, or a different kind of combination.
Yeah. Well, I like the Falco. I like
his
style of writing. Not all of his stories are fantastic, but I like his style. I like his formulas.
Yeah, I mean he's got the style down, right? So usually don't read a story by him that's terrible.
Yeah.
There's like decent and then really good.
Well, I'm going to start with my least favorite, too. Also in Marvel, I read a story by Steve Gerber with Frank Bruner. And I read Howard the Duck number one.
Yeah, cool.
So I've read not a lot of Howard, a lot of newer stuff that came out after Gerber. And I have read the Man-Thing. I think he was introduced in Man-Thing, so I've read the Man-Thing issues. And what I know Steve Gerber from is Defenders Run, which I absolutely love, and the Man-Thing. And inside of that Man-Thing, there's there's that error that like bridges universes, and that's kind of where Howard came in. But like other Marvel series like Ghost Rider and Son of Satan and other titles that were spawned off of something else, this number one does not give you a good idea of who the character is or how he got here. It's basically throwing you in the midst of a story that you had to be following in other titles. And mm-hmm. Howard had a magazine as well, a black and white magazine before this, and you know, he had appeared in the Man-Thing comic. And in this one, he's a duck on our Earth, and it just brings him up like he wants to commit suicide. He's frustrated and miserable and wants to find his way back home. But he comes across this tower of credit cards, which is so bizarre. It's just unusual. And it's like the villain of this story is an accountant that called himself Pro Rata, and he kind of like turned the area around him into like a Conan the Barbarian era. So like it was sword and sorcery type era.
Mm-hmm.
And when Howard got here, he was attacked by like a dog, and that dog turns back into like a barbarian, and then he realizes something's weird, and then he gets zapped into a duck barbarian suit with the huge sword, and he finds this beautiful maiden that's in the dungeon there that he's saving. Like if you look at the cover of it, it almost looks like a Red Sonja-ish type character. A matter of fact, if you didn't see like if it had more chainmail than bikini, you would say, oh, that's Red Sonja with blue dye on her eyes, but
mm-hmm.
but it's not. So he comes to the rescue to save her. Meanwhile, this is the weird part of the story, is J. Jonah Jameson comes in and says, hey, Peter, I got a job for you. I want to fly you out somewhere. There's rumors of a mutant duck that I want you, that takes that actually walks on his feet. I want you to take pictures of him in Cleveland. And that's where Peter flies off to go get snapshots of Howard the Duck. But this is whole like a barbarian issue where he actually saves the maiden, and then the maiden leaves with him. And I'm trying to find where they call her by name to see if it's the one girl that's always with Howard the Duck, like the supporting character, but I don't think it is. But anyway, that's how it, Peter never ran into him yet. That's coming probably next issue to see how that all panned out. But he saved the maiden from the credit card sorcerer. It was well written, but it wasn't like a good starting point for the character for sure. I enjoyed it. It was late night reading, so I thought it was all right.
That's cool.
I read it on my iPad. When I do
Oh.
late night reading, it's usually digital, so I don't have to turn the light on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that can be, it can be for convenient that way,
I got
for sure.
Marvel Unlimited.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And you know
Oh.
what really drove it?
The fact that you're gonna go all digital?
No. I was reading Doctor Strange, okay? And there was a few issues that I was missing digitally. For whatever reason, I didn't enter them in. You know how I get my comics? I take the digital code, enter them in. I missed them, or they were those months that Marvel did away with them and started to do that, like, one trade or three trades per month or something like that. Like, they did away with the digital codes. And
Yeah,
I'm like,
just
okay, if I wanted to keep reading this digitally, I have to continue, and then that's $3.99 a pop, and then you look how cheap a yearly subscription is, and you're like, holy crap. I only have to read like X amount of books and I've already got my money back. So I was like, okay, I'll fill that in and then read the Doctor Stranges, and then I'm impressed. I found some flaws in their there's bugs in their system. Like, if you go to do the search and you look for Doctor Strange, you'll only see the old series. You won't see the new, but they have the new stuff. You just have to go search by character to find it. They don't
Yeah.
have all the series titles in the database, even if they're there. So yeah, there's some strange things, but it's also pretty neat. And the other two books that I selected for, I also read, and I don't own. Like, I don't own Howard the Duck number one, so I thought I'd read it. And then the other ones that I read, I don't own either. So yeah, it's a good way to explore stuff that I don't own, for sure.
Yeah, or even just the convenience of reading stuff if you
Yeah.
don't want to have to try to find it or something.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing I completed in my collection is The Thing. Do you remember after Marvel 2 and 1, he had his own series?
Yeah.
I just finished that. I was missing like 5 issues and I completed it. And I
That's
don't
cool.
have all of Marvel 2 and 1. That's one I definitely. Marvel Team Up and Marvel 2 and 1, I don't have a lot because me and my brother would try to pick titles that we didn't, that were opposite of each other. So we could read more. So he had the Marvel Team Up and the Marvel 2-in-1. I didn't choose those.
Yeah. Nice. All right. So I'll switch over to the DC one then, just to change it up. I read Brave and the Bold issue 122. I don't believe we've covered this one on the show. We've done a lot of Brave and the Bold, but this is Batman and Swamp Thing.
Oh,
And
nice.
it wasn't written by Len Wein, but I thought I would read his character. But it's the longtime team of Bob Haney and Jim Aparo that did this issue. A story called The Hour of the Beast. And when it starts, Swamp Thing has actually been captured by a guy named B.B. Riggs, who is a sort of carnival freak show kind of exhibitor. And he tells Batman, who's upset by the fact that he's got him like that, how he trapped him with some kind of bio-blocking foam. And Batman protests the fact that that he's treating Swamp Thing this way, that he's not an evil creature. And but B.B. Riggs says doesn't care either way. He says, I've got the permit to show him, and he's going to make me rich. So we're given a little bit of a recap for readers that don't know, just through a few panels, with the Swamp Thing and his origin, and with Dr. Alec Holland and all that. And it turns out, though, that Batman is not the only one whose attention that this has attracted. The government as well, a group within a military academy outside Washington, D.C., have also become aware that the Swamp Thing is held by B.B. Riggs, and they're interested in getting him into government custody. So there's that as well. And so while a day later, Batman, one thing I like about Bob Haney and when he's writing Batman is he's not concerned with the whole Dark Avenger kind of side of Batman. Like he'll go swinging through the city in broad daylight, and in this case it's like 90 degrees out, and he wants to check on Swamp Thing. While this is going on, vines, it almost seems like poison ivy is involved, start erupting at different places around the city, out of a secretary's flowers on her desk, lifting a car off the ground, busting out through the walls in the subway. And so this obviously catches Batman's attention. And he drops in on Commissioner Gordon, who's also aware of the situation. And Gordon takes him to the police lab, I guess. And a scientist there explains to Batman that that there's some kind of contamination of the water supply, that the organisms that are causing the outbreak came through that, and they try to use crop duster planes to drop some chemicals to kill it, and it ends up the defoliant. It actually causes the vines to grow even faster. So eventually, Batman heads over. He wants to free Swamp Thing for his help in the situation, and he finds a complicated situation where citizens are trying to attack Swamp Thing, blaming him for what's happening, and but the a helicopter comes in, frees Swamp Thing, and starts to abduct him. It's the government that's interested. So Batman gets in his whirly bat and pursues and frees Swamp Thing. To again to get his help with what's going on, and so the two of them take to the streets, and eventually they figure out that they have to seek this master root kind of thing, that if they find that, and that will affect the rest of the stuff that they're looking for, that there's a king root that they actually call it, that the scientist at the police scientists further his further research has revealed this, that if they can discover the king root and destroy it, the colony that is of the vines should disappear. So Batman finds Swamp Thing again. He comes across B.B. Riggs as well, and has no patience whatsoever. He actually comes flying in, both boots to the back of this guy, knocks him over, picks him up, and tells him that, says, "You selfish crumb, Swamp Thing's the city's only hope. Bug out or I'll crack your greedy skull." But he does find Swamp Thing, and Swamp Thing's able to help him find the king root and take it out. In the end, B.B. Riggs's selfishness is overcome, and he actually helps Batman get Swamp Thing to safety. Swamp Thing, in the process, takes a huge amount of damage. I think both of his, or all of his limbs are blown off in the process of uprooting the king root, and they load him into a van that takes him out to the swamp so that he can be restored. And so B.B. Riggs at the end is stating that even though he's going to lose a lot of money, that Swamp Thing deserves his freedom. So I thought it was a fun issue. The Jim Aparo art, this era, this time period, Jim Aparo art is really fantastic. And you know, Haney has a reputation for doing some crazy things, and I would say that whether that appeals to you or not, that's sort of on the low side. In this issue, there's not too much that's too crazy or out of character or anything like that. That it's a pretty straightforward in that respect, but enjoyable team up between Batman and Swamp Thing.
Yeah, and they team up a lot. They teamed up in the Alan Moore run.
Yeah, I read that whole run not that long ago. It was really fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, no surprise, you know, it's pretty critically acclaimed, but I also really, really liked it. So.
So, my next book is Blink. Number 1 through 4. I chose this because I don't know much about this character, and I didn't read Age of Apocalypse, so I was like, but I am aware of her in Exiles, so like I think I read Exiles 1 through 6 way back in the day, and I stopped it because it was like alternate reality stuff, and I didn't like it at the time. Now things have changed.
Uh-huh.
But Blink is a teleporter, and I think when Age of Apocalypse came out, she had a huge fan following.
Yeah.
Even though she didn't make it out, from what I understand. But so after Age of Apocalypse, this book came out by Scott Bloedel and Trevor McCarthy. Trevor McCarthy is an awesome artist. Like, he's done some Aquaman recently. He's done Clarion the Witch Boy. Like, I love his art style. His art style was different in 2001 than it is now. He draws her really contorted. Like, in certain areas it looks really weird, but it works. It's effective. So Blink is a teleporter. She can teleport herself like Nightcrawler. Except it seems like Blink can teleport herself through other dimensions and realities and such. So she's in this Age of Apocalypse, the way this opens up. It's a dismal world. She's with a bunch of rebels, which is essentially Magneto's group, and she has been trained by Sabretooth. And if you read Sabretooth, I mean, if you read Age of Apocalypse, Sabretooth wasn't always on the Magneto side. He started off on the Apocalypse side. So this doesn't explain all that. It just kind of like sets you up. Like, here she is in this world. And it's bizarre how the reading order goes, because like if you follow Age of Apocalypse, it suggests you read Blink 1, 2, 3, and then you're in Age of Apocalypse, and then it finishes 4 like way later. Really bizarre. Like I'm not even sure I understand why, because it seems like you're in the middle of Age of Apocalypse instead of at the beginning, and then I don't know. It's a bizarre Marvel Unlimited reading order, and it was coincidental that I started Age of Apocalypse. Like I thought I was gonna go from Blink to Exiles again, but it led me down another path, another rabbit hole. But there's this X-Men villain, Holocaust. I think he's one of the Four Horsemen of Apocalypse, but he works for Apocalypse anyway in this world. And he's fighting this character, Blastar, and you know Blastar from the Fantastic Four fame. He's in the Negative Zone, and Blastar is kind of holding his own, and Blink is watching this as it prevails, and it's like, maybe I can recruit this guy to help us fight Apocalypse. So she ports herself, she teleports herself to this the Negative Zone after Blastar was sort of defeated at the moment by Holocaust. And she follows him there, but when she teleports herself across into the Negative Zone, she forgets who she is. So she has amnesia the entire time. And she ends up fighting this character called Armor. And it's not spelled like armor, but I think you pronounce it like armor. It's spelled Ahmyor. And he's kind of like a warrior that is trying to defeat Blastar and bring Annihilus back into power. And it's weird because this Armor character is Annihilus. And like through three of the issues, you don't even know it's Annihilus. And over the course of those issues, she falls in love with Annihilus. And they end up fighting Blastar. And at the end of it, she finally regains her memory. She says, "What the fuck am I doing with Annihilus?" And teleports herself back to where she was. And then Annihilus, I think, is going to get back into power from Blastar. So it was a really unusual negative world tale. Like it was bizarre. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the art style. I enjoyed I guess the character's name is, I forget her last name, but I'll always remember her first name because it's Clarice. So I always think of Silence of the Lambs. I don't see that name too often, but when I see it come up, I always think of Silence of the Lambs. But I guess I'm gonna explore her in Age of Apocalypse, but I haven't gotten there yet. So it was a good introduction. I was told before I start Age of Apocalypse, I'm supposed to read some Legion Legacy or something like that. So I may go back and read that before I get in deep with Age of Apocalypse, just to see why we got here. But other than that, it was pretty enjoyable.
That's cool. I've never read Age of Apocalypse. I've never read that,
Neither
but
have I. I've left Marvel a lot. And I left it, I think, when Age of Apocalypse started, things started. Was Age of Apocalypse before or after Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld doing Heroes Reborn? Do you know?
I
Let's see,
don't
this
know for sure. It's like in that same era. I
thought
want
it
to
was, I
say
thought
it's.
it was close.
I think it is close, yeah.
Let's see, X-Men Chronicles kicks it off. It's 1995. And then if we go to like Iron Man Volume 2, that's the Jim Lee stuff. That is 1996. So it's right before it. Right before the onslaught. I knew it was close. But I decided to go all in on the Heroes Reborn stuff and then skipped a bunch of stuff. Like, I think Clone Saga was around this era. And I was like, I got the hell out. I got the hell out of the X-Men books. So, but I stayed with Avengers and a few other things. I've dipped my toe into Marvel and then came in and out of it a lot. Like every time I thought about cutting back, who suffered? Marvel suffered. DC never suffered. I just kept marching. If anything, it was Vertigo. But you were talking about you never read Age of Apocalypse.
Yeah, well, all that stuff you were just talking about was when I stopped reading comics, and I did come across that character Blink. I still haven't read any of that stuff, but I did come across that character Blink in Exiles, which I think might be a different version of her, but Exiles was one of the titles I tried in the
I
early
don't think I don't
2000s.
think I don't think it's a different version of her, and the reason I don't think it is because I read Blink, the miniseries, which is the bridge to Exiles. Like issue four ends and it starts Exiles. It leads into Exiles. And but the same character starts off in Age of Apocalypse. Do you know what I mean? Like in issue one, you're in Age of Apocalypse. So it's, I don't know. I don't know enough about it, but I'm just saying that's how issue four ends in Exiles. Yeah.
Yeah, so it could be.
Ah, water.
But Exiles is a cool series, what I read of it, anyways.
Yeah. I might go into that next. I think I want to go to the Age of Apocalypse first and then go into the Exiles. So I'm actually going backwards instead of forward. If I wanted to go forward, I would go into Exiles. But I think I'm going to go backward.
Yeah, I could see that and read what had come before. Or just whatever is more interesting too, but I don't think I read a ton of Exiles, but I remember liking it at the time. And I think that was one of the first things I read that Judd Winnick wrote.
Yeah.
So he was writing that for a while, if I recall correctly.
He did.
And then eventually I realized, hey, wait, this is that guy that was on The Real World.
Yeah, I was just gonna mention that. The Real World. Barry Wean Genius or whatever.
And then he ended up writing Pedro and Me as a result of being on Real World and becoming friends with that guy. All right, so my final comic is Marvel 2-in-1, speaking of Thing. This is issue 49, and it's Thing with Doctor Strange. So I thought that sounds like an interesting combination. This is written by Mary
What
Jo.
number was it again?
49.
49. My brain wrote 94.
Dyslexia.
Yeah, I guess so.
Interestingly, the inside cover is a advertisement for Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the version with Donald Sutherland and Leonard Nimoy, Jeff Goldblum. I've never seen that one. But anyway, it's by Mary Jo Duffy with art by Alan Kupperberg and Gene Day. And it starts off with the Thing ticked off because he was planning on doing some fishing with his sonic fishing pole, which I guess, according to the editor's note, we first saw the sonic fishing pole in Fantastic Four number 54. Well, he was planning on doing some fishing, but all of a sudden the skies have gotten really dark. So his guide that's driving the boat takes him back to this t the town, the nearby town called Krallensport, and its reputation is just nothing really ever happens there. And so, unfortunately for the thing, there's not really much for him to do, but he's going to stay the night, and the only hotel in the place, it pretty much looks like the Bates Motel, at least like in the Bates Motel TV series.
Oh, okay. But I think they modeled that
That
after the actual
version.
movie.
Yeah, I think it's pretty similar, right?
Yeah, it's the same.
So.
It's one of those one floor hotel things, motels. Yeah. Off
Yeah,
the
so it
side of the
doesn't.
street, it's got like 10 rooms maybe.
Yeah, so what it looks like actually is the home, not the motel, like the Bates home,
Yeah.
which is several stories. It's that kind of style of building. He's like, oh, there's things not too impressed with it anyways. He says, you call that creepy old rat trap a hotel? Forget it. They ain't got anything there to interest a sophisticated guy like. And then he stops because he sees an attractive blonde woman having trouble with her car. The rear tire is flat and her jack is broken. So the thing picks up the car for her and holds it while she changes the tire. And she's excited to meet one of the Fantastic Four. As they're talking, she's finishing up fixing the car and stuff. A limo pulls up, and Doctor Strange gets out and goes in to the hotel with his driver. Thing tries to get his attention, but he can't move because he's holding up the car. It's like, so after they're done, he goes to try to catch up with them. In the meantime, while that was going on, the woman reveals that she's staying there because her cousins are the ones that run the hotel. So Ben goes in, but by the time he gets in there, Doctor Strange is gone. So he rings the bell at the desk, and this old woman. It's kind of like Agatha Harkness, sneaks up on him, kind of surprises him, and then another guy, short, bald guy, appears behind him. May I take your bags? And Thing thinks, Bags is right, these creeps are popping out of the woodwork. So it's definitely got like a kind of classic horror feel to the place that he's staying. We get a little peek into Doc Strange and the room that he's checked into, and it seems that he knows that the thing is there, and he intentionally avoided him, but he does want Ben there, does actually want his help, so he's got some sort of plan going on. So later that evening, the thing is having a tea with the people that run the hotel, but Jane. The blonde woman that he met earlier, she's not around. He finds out that she's out walking on the beach, and she has a tendency to do that. But then she screams for help. So the thing busts right through the nearby wall and goes running out to the beach. And there's some kind of shadow near her. He goes and punches it. It turns out to just be a stack of driftwood. But Jane insists that that it had been moving. So the old woman and the short bald guy, they show up then and take Jane away and reprimand Thing for the damages that he caused, and say that Jane, she just has a tendency to have nightmares and to see things and stuff. But we check in with Doctor Strange, and we find out that the events that he's expecting to happen have started, and we get a little bit of a recount and a background as we get to sort of the midpoint of the comic, that the reason that Doctor Strange is there is that there two centuries ago there was a ship that wrecked nearby, and the ship was carrying a necromancer, and knowing that he would die, he set into motion these events. He put this necklace on the on this other person on the ship that was a he was his. See if they say his name here. But he was basically a Polynesian man who was kind of big and muscular, where the necromancer, of course, is a slight, skinny figure. And basically, he took the spirit of the sailor with him into this sort of paranormal sleep. And so I guess recently there were some geological activity in the area that brought up the wreck of their ship, and there have been more and more occult things happening in the area. And I guess this connects into the woman Jane's visions that she's had, and they actually are real. So as things escalate, the Polynesian sailor ends up coming back and attacking. He goes after Jane, being controlled by the necromancer, essentially through the necklace that he's wearing. And so this is kind of where Doctor Strange needed the thing to be involved, is that he is able to physically counter the Polynesian warrior, or sailor rather. So while that's going on, at first Doctor Strange in his astral form, Thing doesn't really know who's talking to him, but he's given him advice as to, how to proceed. But once the necromancer rises as well, Doctor Strange has to kind of leave Thing to himself and combat the necromancer on the astral plane. So Thing eventually figures out that that the necklace has something to do with what's going on, and he eventually grabs that and crushes it, and that allows the Polynesian warrior to, I keep saying warrior because he's big and strong, the sailor, that allows his spirit to be released. He appears briefly as his true self and thanks Thing for freeing the thing for freeing him. And once Doctor Strange has dealt with the necromancer, kind of by delaying him until there's something to do with the constellations, and that was part of the reason why the necromancer on this particular night was able to reappear. He does something to delay him, and the constellations move out of orbit, and the constellation he needs no longer exists, or something like that. Didn't 100% follow that, but Strange at the end checks back in with what's going on with Thing and is happy to see that the Thing did quite all right on his own. And but as for Ben and Jane, they really don't 100% know what was going on. And unless I missed something, that was one part of what I didn't understand, is why Doctor Strange needed to stay out of view and needed Ben not to know that he was involved. Besides, him briefly seeing him walk into the hotel early on, I didn't quite catch that, but otherwise, I enjoyed the atmosphere kind of thing, putting Thing in kind of an unusual situation. Not so much as what he had to do, but but the setting of a kind of classic gothic horror sort of setting, and having events go on in sort of two different arenas, the physical and the spiritual, was kind of neat. So I thought it was a fun story.
That your favorite of the
I
three?
think prob I think probably I think that and Brave and the Bold are pretty close, but that might have been my favorite just sort of because of the setting and stuff.
Yeah.
I say the art was pr the Jim Aparo art was the best art, but this was the art when this was there was nothing wrong with it.
I like that issue because it was one that I distinctively remember actually picking up off the spinner rack. I don't have many Marvel 2-in-1, but I know I have this one. I remember buying it, so I need to revisit that at some point. So my last book is Age of Apocalypse. And if I would have done some research, I think I would have read Prelude to Age of Apocalypse before getting to Age of Apocalypse. But I came about it coincidentally because of the Blink issues. I had no intention of reading Age of Apocalypse. It just the story led me there. So if you look up the reading order of what you should read, it suggests Blink 1 through 3 and then start X-Men Chronicles. And
Right.
the weird thing about that is Blink was 2001 and X-Men Chronicles was 1995. But so this is like a trade reading order. This is like a flashback, yeah.
Yeah.
So I've already read 1 through 4, and where 4 fits into this story arc of Blink, it's like the last, it's the fourth from the last issue of Age of Apocalypse. So I've already read sort of, I guess you could say the ending while she was gone in the negative zone. I started X-Men Chronicles from 1995 by Howard Mackie and Terry Dodson, and I actually started reading last night, but I didn't finish because I passed out. Was X-Men Chronicles number 2 by Howard Mackie and Ian Churchill, and I'm finding it interesting when I go just Google this stuff, how people have different reading orders of this. And I guess the main popular ones are the way that they constructed the trades, so that's what I'm kind of going by. But this is a world where Apocalypse is getting ready to come down and with his mutants and four horsemen destroy Earth for the most part and leave mutants behind, sort of like Magneto's agenda. But in this world, Charles Xavier saved Magneto and won him over into his philosophy. So now Magneto leads the X-Men, and he's got like Colossus, Storm, Iceman, Jean Grey, his son and daughter, you know, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, and they're getting ready for this event or this attack, and he's training them. That's they drive it home that he trains the hell out of them, like keeps them trained to the point of exhaustion for the most part. And he loves his kids. And what happens is Apocalypse decides to go attack like a nuclear facility to launch nuclear missiles and destroy a lot of humans. And Magneto hears about this, so he sends out his X-Men, including himself, go to this facility to fight the mutants. Sabretooth is one of them. Gideon is another one that's working for, and then the rest are like horsemen. They end up in this big battle. He leaves his daughter behind, Scarlet Witch, and to protect the kids that he's training at the school. And another villain who I don't even remember his name, but he decides to attack the school at the same time and gets in a fight with Scarlet Witch, kills Scarlet Witch, and Rogue ends up fighting him and defeating him. So Rogue was actually brought to Magneto by Mystique, and Mystique is like, "I need you to take care of my daughter. Please take care of her." And before Scarlet Witch dies, she tells Rogue, "You really need to help my father. You know, he's a loner, and you need to." I think in this world, they actually become a couple, which is weird because she seems so much younger than Magneto. But we'll see what happens. Sabretooth is a bad guy originally. Wolverine is like totally berserker. Like he's missing one claw set. He's got a set of claws, and he goes into berserker mode and can almost like take out an entire thing of X-Men if he wanted to. But he's on the good side, but uncontrollable. And Sabretooth is pretty much betrayed. He's kind of like the leader of this, but Apocalypse used him. And there's this other female character that he kind of says, "Okay, now you're in charge, kill Sabretooth." And that's kind of where Sabretooth sort of switches sides in the midst of battle and realizes that he's on the wrong side. And that's pretty much how issue one ends, as he comes back to his daughter who's dead, and he has to deal with it. But they fought off the first attack by Apocalypse. It's an interesting story, and I've never read it before, so it's kind of fun reading it. We'll see where it goes. I'm still haven't decided if I want to go back and read the prelude, but or just continue with this reading order and see if I like it. You know what I mean? And then go back and read the prelude. I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes if they release prelude stuff after the fact, I tend to just read it in the order that it came out.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause a lot of times those are when they write a prelude after the fact that they're written knowing that most of the readers are gonna already know what comes later, you know. But sometimes the reading orders, they'll say, "Well, this actually occurs first, so you should start here." But
Yeah,
usually,
chronologically, it depends on how
right?
you want to experience it. I
Yeah.
think the best way to probably that I'd prefer is the way it came out.
Yeah, me
But
too.
in this case, the prelude, with the exception
Oh,
of
thank you.
Blink, with the exception of Blink, it came out before Age of Apocalypse. It was like the Legion Quest arc. So
Yeah.
it really did, that part did come out before, and then they changed all the titles during, like X Factor became Factor X, and there was Gambit in the Externals, and you know all the titles changed. Whereas before Age of Apocalypse, they were Cable X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, and you know the regular titles that we know. So we'll see where what happens.
Right. Cool.
Was your
Yeah,
cat back there early on when you were talking about the second book? Just out of curiosity, was he
Yeah,
meowing?
at some point, yeah,
He
he wanted
sounds
me to
like a
let him
little
downstairs.
baby or something.
Yeah.
He goes, "Arr!"
He acts like a baby, that's for sure. Especially when he
To
wants to
eat.
eat,
That's
yeah.
right. If you let him, he'd gourd himself to death.
Yeah, one time I accidentally left a loaf of bread out on the counter. I might have already told you this, and then
Yeah.
he chewed right through the bag and then ate a whole bunch of bread and then threw up. Thanks a lot, dummy.
Yeah, we left we went to the movie theater with my parents. What did we go see? Kingsman. Yeah, we went to go see Kingsman, the second one, which I really liked. But we both bought a popcorn, and we always have they always have those refills. And we came in, we came back, we left the popcorn on the counter, and guess what? Harley ate the whole thing of popcorn. So I'm like, I thought she was gonna be shitting all the time, but it, I guess she handled it really well.
That's good.
Yeah. And me and Barb don't usually get butter on our popcorn, but my parents do, and they're the ones that had it left. And I was like, that's gonna really eat up her stomach.
Yeah.
All that popcorn butter, but she seemed to do okay. She, it was like she was saying, "See, you should bring me popcorn more often. I'm a good
Yeah.
girl."
We've brought up several times when we were there and she went in and hopped up and was hanging out with Kara on the bed and then growled at me when I tried to come in the room. That was hilarious. She's like,
She goes like this. She goes, I
yeah,
love it.
that was funny. She's like, no boys allowed. I'm hanging out with my visitor, but not you.
That's all I had. Do you have anything else you want to mention?
No, I think that's it. I just got Kara came in the room and gave me the package and it came super fast. I ordered I was going through a bunch of stuff yesterday and I realized I've had season one and season three of the Wonder Woman series, Linda Carter Wonder
Yeah.
Woman. I've had one and three for like the super longest time because I got them like through this trading service a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I just never bothered. I never got around to buying the second season. And so when I was going through them, I saw them again, and I was like, I'm just gonna go ahead and order it from Amazon. I think I just ordered it yesterday. I mean, we have Prime, but it usually doesn't come that fast.
Maybe you're near a Prime Hub or something. One of those.
Yeah, something.
That is
They
fast.
had it in stock. Maybe it, I think it was yesterday, but maybe it was really early in the morning or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where they keep the Wonder Woman DVDs is somewhere nearby.
Your neighbor's house.
Yeah. Little depot.
Yeah,
But
that's
anyways,
cool
I
if you
thought I
got it
might.
fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to tackle one of them in the distant, the near future, we could start with one, episode one.
True.
I'd be willing to do that. I know we still have to finish Battlestar Galactica, but they removed it from Netflix.
Yeah, and I guess now that we'd have to ask, see if Rob wants to do that as
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
or you can just listen to us talk about it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we should probably give him a heads up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll let him know. I'll send him an IM.
He's interested.
Say, we're gonna probably talk about episode one coming up soon if you wanna. If you want to join us.
Cool.
All
Sounds like a
right.
plan, but yeah, that's all I got.
All right, you can reach Chris on the Twitter machine at MythMakingETC. You just changed your name again. I don't even know what it is. Something with name in it.
Yeah, I don't know what I did either, but I mean the at handle is still the
It's
same.
still the same. Yeah, I'm at
Yeah.
Mike Myers Brunch. I was like, who is this?
Well, yeah, you leave yours as Omactivate, but I
Yeah.
change mine every once in a while. I think
I'm
I
always
was.
omactivating.
I think it. I think I went to change it, and I tried to leave it blank just to see what would happen, and it said it requires a name or something like that. So
Oh,
then
so you got a name.
I just wrote a name or something. I took it literally.
Ah. And, this is on the Geek Brunch podcast feed at www.geekbrunchpodcast.com. And on the Facebook, it's Geek Brunch Podcast, where you can follow all the episode threads there. I'm Mike at comicbooknoise.com. Chris is mythmakingetc@gmail.com, right?
Yep.
And any episodes you got coming up or blogs you want to plug?
No, not really. I haven't done anything much this past month, so
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to posting on the blog again soon, but I'll tweet that out if I do.
Yeah, I have another Mike Ems in the can, and I have this one, and then I guess things get to some normalcy on schedule now that the summertime has officially ended.
Yeah, we should be doing episodes a little more regularly until the holidays at least.
Yeah, until
So,
Thanksgiving and Christmas.
yeah. But usually throughout the winter months, besides the holiday break, we're pretty consistent.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to have like a discussion on something we could all have access to. Like, I don't know if he has Marvel Unlimited or whatever, but maybe we could just pick some book at random and all
Yeah.
talk about it, you know?
I usually enjoy being able to not just talk about
Yeah,
it's
so
nice to
we
usually have
could
something we've all done.
have a discussion on something, you know?
Right.
So,
Yeah, and I think we're narrowing in on.
we'll get Rob into the digital world.
Yeah. There you go. You must read this digitally, even if you have it.
I'm
Let's see
sure
what
he's.
happens.
I mean, the fact that he reads alphabetically and stuff like that, I think he's like anal retentive about stuff. So he'll like, I bet you he knows every box where his comics are. Like, if you say, hey, can you find Batman 472? I bet you he knows where it is.
Oh
Whereas
yeah, I'm
me,
almost positive that his are organized, yeah.
yeah. Whereas me, I can point you to the area. Like, I know which decade I purchased it in and
Yeah.
sort of where it is, but I'm gonna have to go through 20 long boxes or so to find it, or short
Right.
boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I told you this when I was there. We stayed in the guest room and you told me, there's comics in the closet. If you
Yeah.
want to look through them, go ahead and stuff. And there were also a few boxes that were along the wall.
Yeah. Like the
And
Ultraverse one is on your wall. The bed side. I don't know if you saw that one.
I'm not sure, but there was some not like outside of the closet.
Yeah,
There was.
those ones there, with like Marvel feature and stuff like that.
Yeah, there was one. It was a box. What caught my attention was that it wasn't a comic box. It was, but the shape of it was similar to a comic box, but
Yeah,
had something
it was
else in
a
it, like
Diamond
diapers or
distributor
something.
box. Yeah, oh, diapers, that's my brother's, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, I wonder what he's got in this diaper box. It's probably nothing like all that important or anything like that. And there was stuff stacked on top of it, and so I moved that to the side. I'm just curious as to what's inside this diaper box. And the first thing I went through was like there were several like pre Giant Size X-Men era X-Men issues. I was like, oh, those are better than what I was expecting to be in here. So it was kind of funny. You never know what you're gonna find. It's like a treasure
A
hunt.
treasure trove, yeah.
Yeah.
Those ones in the diaper box are my brother's that I'm supposed to sell. I started selling them, but I got
Ah, okay.
lazy.
I
Yeah.
see. That makes more sense, honestly.
Yeah. So that's the box you found. I thought you saw the box, like, you know where we had those extra blankets towards the back end of the bed?
Yeah.
There's a box there, and that's like, that was the remaining Ultraverse stuff that I
Okay.
needed to finish. So that whole box is like Ultraverse.
Gotcha.
And then as you open the closet, all the stuff on the right is DC, all the stuff at the left is Marvel and Independent, and they're in order, but the stuff in the middle are all back issues. So I like know where stuff is. That
Yeah.
stuff though is not inventoried. I need to get off my ass. Just so I don't buy something I already have and just
Right.
inventory, just go up there and inventory. I kind of more or less know what's up there, but I'm not 100%. Like one of those boxes has the remainder of CrossGen that I haven't read. And what I really need to do is go through that box, inventory it, and find out what I have left to complete the cross gen. Which is not much. It's like a few towards the tail end of the series that I
Yeah.
stopped when they started shipping Funky.
Yeah, I think I peeked in a couple of those boxes in the closet. I think one, I know I remember that one of the one I ones I opened had a whole bunch of Warlord in it.
Yeah, there's a whole Warlord run in there. Well, almost a whole Warlord run. Those are the issues that I picked up to complete the run. I've read most of the Warlord though.
Cool.
Cool. All right, well, you have a good Sunday, and I'll talk to you in
Thanks.
another 2 weeks. I mean, we'll talk before then, but you know, podcast in 2 weeks or so.
Right,
Yeah.
yes. We'll our secret messages will continue in the meantime, but
Yeah, I gotta tell him to watch, see if he can watch Wonder Woman. And if we can pick something random that we could cover. If it's
sure.
like a 4-issue arc, or even if it's just 1 issue, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Maybe we could do like a rotation where 1 week I pick something, 1 week you pick something, and 1 week Rob picks something.
I'd be up for that.
Yeah.
So,
We'll see if we
all
can
right.
make it happen.
We shall discuss.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll talk to you
Okay.
later. See ya.
All right.
Bye.
Adios.